Move to U.S. versus Moore. Attachment. Grego.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel for the United States. I'm here on behalf of my client, Natasha Moore. She filed an appeal of the sentence handed down by Judge Herndon in the Southern District of Illinois. She received a 33-month sentence, which was a guideline sentence. She appeals the reasonableness of that sentence imposed. The essence of her argument to this court is that since the change took place when Booker was announced, that courts have some discretion to impose statutory sentences. They're not required to, and now the guidelines are advisory. Ms. Moore is not asking that her sentence be totally discarded or thrown out. She's asking that a reasonable sentence be imposed. The factors that the Ms. Moore asked this court to consider are that she did not have a significant criminal history, as is spelled out within the pre-sentence report, that she could have paid restitution in a timely fashion were she to be employed, and factors concerning her family history.
Didn't she previously have a probationary sentence?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Didn't she previously have a probationary sentence?
She had a sentence for probation out of Missouri. It was about 13 years old, for which she received no criminal history point. Her only criminal history point consisted of a criminal damage to property, I believe, in Missouri. And the essence of the argument, and I think the most important point she brings to the court, is that Judge Herndon laid great weight upon this former conviction, which even under the guidelines doesn't even have any weight. It appeared that he had his mind made up about what sentence he was going to impose. That it had to be a guideline sentence, that the only thing that is reasonable is a guideline sentence. That's not the status of the law, I don't believe, presently. The quotes that are attributed to him in the appeal and are that he doesn't believe that people deserve more than one break. And if she got a break 13 years ago and she followed through with the probation and didn't violate her probation, then I don't think that's what should be considered heavily in giving her a sentence to the Department of Corrections, or to the Bureau of Prisons, I should say. I think the court unduly emphasized something under the guidelines that wasn't supposed to be given any emphasis in this particular case, and he did that in a prejudicial manner towards this defendant. As I stated at her sentencing hearing, the court had an opportunity to grant probation to one of the Moores. I'm sure the court knows that there's another defendant, her husband, and could have done that, or could have handed out a smaller sentence. Obviously, she had a very young child,
The judge staggered the sentence. So
he did.
Evidence that he considered the unique circumstances of her situation.
I believe that Judge Herndon did carefully consider that issue, and judging by the length of time that the sentencing hearing took, and the questions that he asked, he no doubt consider her family situation. However, I'm not saying that he didn't consider it. I'm saying that he could have done something different than what he did.
Well, sure. That doesn't mean what he did is wrong. Because no. He could have done something different.
Which, staggering the sentence, only caused her to end up with the same sentence that she would have gotten under the guidelines. And my argument is that to put as much weight upon her lack of criminal history in announcing to the and meeting out his sentence, he's not showing fairness to a defendant, and there's no reason why he couldn't have exercised discretion to give a shorter sentence than what he imposed for Mrs. Moore.
What was her occupation
at the time of?
Time of the offense.
Not employed. The Moores were trying to write some screenplays and those kind of things. They were involved in the entertainment industry in some form or fashion, and in fact had gotten leave of court to go to California during the time while they were on bond to present some of those things to some artists out on the West Coast. The important thing that she brings to this court is that she would like the court to consider that the sentence should not have been within the guidelines, but should have been less than the guideline amount, and especially based upon her lack of criminal history. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Burke.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Kevin Burke, and I am an Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois. The appellant has focused in the brief and in oral argument on factors involving family situation and involving restitution to the neglect, if not the outright disregard, of most of the other sentencing factors. The appellant asks that this court find the sentence is illegal because Judge Herndon did not adopt the limited application of the 3553A factors that the appellant advances and did not accordingly take the same view of these limited factors. What the judge did do, by contrast, is look at all of the 3553A factors after having first, as was required, correctly computed the guidelines range, recognizing that the judge had the authority to sentence outside the guidelines, and recognizing on a number of occasions that the guidelines were merely advisory. And the sentence that ultimately was imposed did fall within guidelines range. And because it fell within guidelines range, the sentence is entitled to a presumption that it is reasonable. And this is a presumption that the appellant has not and simply cannot overcome. The court is familiar with the facts, but there are several facts that bear some reexamination with respect to the 3553A factors. This was a very elaborate scheme that was carried out over the course of half of a year. The Moores pretended to be an educational and management company for actors in the film industry, engaged in a legitimate business, when in reality they were using five different phone lines and a number of aliases so that they could apply for lines of credit and alternatively would use the aliases to pose as the head of the company or to pose as credit references for the company and then run up the lines of credit as long as they could to order merchandise, which they did not pay for, but rather turned around and resold on the Internet or at pawn shops. The loss totaled more than $162,000 with an intended loss of almost $300,000. Now, it is very much true that a court is not to impose a greater sentence than is necessary to effectuate the goals of sentencing, but there are many more goals of sentencing to be addressed than the ones addressed by Ms. Moore. Judge Herndon thought that in order to promote respect for the law, in order to deter others, to provide adequate deterrence, In order to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities, this was the sentence which was reasonable and necessary to effectuate those goals. So looking at some of the specific complaints of Ms. Moore, she complained that, for instance, Judge Moore should have found that the death of her child meant that she was less likely to reoffend. But this argument is neither intuitive nor is it developed during the sentencing hearing or in the brief by Ms. Moore. Another specific complaint is that the judge failed to adequately account for the strain of finding care for the couple's 2-year-old son. In argument, counsel has backed away from the claim in the brief that the judge did not consider these factors at all. Clearly, a great bulk of the sentencing hearing was devoted to ensuring, for instance, that the Mr. Moore's relative who had sexually abused him was not going to be in the picture in this 2-year-old's life. Even suggested that perhaps places that the defendants at the time were asking to be placed may not really serve what they're hoping to do, that being placed in California might not be a good idea, and helped prod the defendants into working out what was best for them. And the judge, with obvious trepidation, saying he'd never done it before, did in fact stagger the sentences because that is what the defendants believe was best to provide some continuity of care for their 2-year-old son. Another specific complaint is that Judge Herndon failed to recognize that a lesser sentence would allow Ms. Moore to be better able to pay restitution. And the specific claims in the brief are that Ms. Moore is educated and employable, and therefore, if she were out of jail, she could make restitution to the victims. A few responses to that. One is that the obvious implications are that in economic offenses, if you're not terribly educated, then you would be serving a higher sentence because those people who are educated and employable would serve lower sentences because they can pay restitution. Another response is that the acknowledgement of the restitution obligation is something that's already factored in the sentence because it's a portion of the acknowledgement of responsibility for which Ms. Moore did receive a 2-point reduction. Another specific complaint of Ms. Moore's is that Judge Herndon placed an undue emphasis on her criminal history. In 1991, Ms. Moore did have a felony credit card fraud for which she received a probationary sentence. And she had in 2000, a criminal damage to property for which she also received a probationary sentence. Ultimately, she did not receive an enhancement under the guidelines because...
What was the nature of those offenses?
Well, the nature of the offenses in 1991, Ms. Moore worked at a shoe store, and she used a customer's credit card, and with enlisting the help of a friend, used that credit card to purchase from shoes from that very company, running up I don't remember the exact amount, but a felony level amount. In 2000, the criminal property damage was vandalism to a boyfriend's car. And notably in both cases, in 91, Ms. Moore initially lied to the police about her involvement. And in 2000, the records that were available at the time of the PSR were that she told police that she wasn't involved, but ultimately she did plead guilty to that. Now, I believe the judge's comments about her criminal history, I don't believe there's any hidden meaning. The judge's comments are to be taken for at their face value. He didn't believe in giving her a break in this case because she'd already had breaks in the past. In other words, no special treatment. She was not entitled to be sentenced below the guidelines. And in fact, even if you find that there was some hidden meaning, what effect really was it given? No effect. Ms. Moore was sentenced at the low end of the guidelines range. So the standard here is not to look at all of the 3553A factors and have a court of review exercise its independent judgment with respect to each 3553A factor. That would be a de novo review. It's whether looking in totality whether the sentence imposed is a reasonable sentence. Judge Herndon did impose a sentence that was eminently reasonable, in which he considered all of the 3553A factors as well as the guidelines. And if there are no other, are there any questions, Your Honors?
I don't think so.
Okay, thank you.
How much time? You have 4 minutes.
I'll try to clear up one misunderstanding. Always been amazed how people can read things and get different interpretations out of what they read. I didn't try to abandon any part of my client's factors that she raised under the statutory sentencing pursuant to 3553. The part I'm going to try to clear up is that where I stated Natasha Moore believes that the court did not consider these factors at all in imposing her sentence. I think that's a very literal misinterpretation that the U.S. attorney has put on my statement in the discussion section of the brief. Certainly, the court has pointed out here and has seen that the court did take into account in staggering the sentences that would take some care of the family situation. However, I was talking as to all the factors considered, not just the three that I mentioned. I think that if the court looks at page 16 of the sentencing hearing in this case, the parts that I didn't quote in my brief, which are contained in the middle of the that page, says, and I quote, "I don't think the other misdemeanor conviction means much. To tell you the truth, in terms of what she's charged with or what she's convicted of this time, but the other one means quite a bit, quite frankly, because it's another fraud issue. If it's a zero under the guidelines, it's a zero under the guidelines. It's criminal history, but it's something that the court shouldn't consider, and it's been given way too much emphasis by this court. And that's what I would like this court to focus upon, is what read the plain words of the sentencing hearing. Just because the court says it's reasonable five times in the sentencing hearing doesn't make it reasonable. It's not reasonable to give that much emphasis to a conviction that has zero history points.
Apparently, that's not what the judge disagrees with you, however.
I'm sorry?
Apparently the judge disagreed with you on that point.
Well, I didn't say those things. The judge did, and that's what I'm bringing to your attention, Your Honor. As to,
well, I guess that it's is there a conflict as you see it then between the specific factors that a judge can take into consideration under the statute versus the sentencing guidelines?
I think that based on the current status of the law, that he can take into account both the statutory factors and the guidelines, and I think that's what he should do, and I think they should use their discretion and be fair to people. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You took this case by appointment, did you?
I'm sorry.
You took this case by appointment?
Yes.
Now, the court expresses its thanks to you and the excellent job you do in representing your client.
It is my pleasure.
Thank you.
Be before the court in Chicago.